Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Mind on Mental Health podcast. My name's Andy Dean. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. And today I'm speaking with Dave Clouser. Dave is a Marine Corps veteran who had a full career in secondary education and also obtained a doctorate in education. Today, Dave is a certified peer recovery specialist who works with the First Responder Program at Penn Medicine Princeton House Behavioral Health's inpatient program. Today, Dave and I discuss how loved ones can help first responders that they care about get help for mental health or substance use issues. So I hope you guys enjoy the podcast and find it helpful. All right, Dave. Hey, thank you so much for being with me today.
My pleasure.
Now, I've been doing the podcast for a while now. And we've really been wanting to have someone from our first responders program come on and, you know, talk a little bit about the first responder population. So I'm really glad that we were able to do that today.
Well, it's good to be here. Hopefully I have something worthwhile to contribute.
I have no doubt that you will, sir. So where I usually like to start with people is just if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and where you work for Penn and what you do.
Okay. When I graduated from college, I spent 6 years in the Marine Corps.
Well, thank you for your service. And
thank you. And then I had a career in education. And during that time is when I ran headlong into my own issues with substances. Mm-hmm. And God blessed me with the path in recovery. And so in 2015, I retired from education and ultimately wound up being trained as a peer recovery specialist. Oh. And during the pandemic is when I started working at Princeton House with the first responder team. So next month will mark 3 years.
Oh, congrats.
Been blessed to work with the first responders.
Amazing. And they're blessed to work with you, sir.
Well, hopefully it's a mutually rewarding situation.
I believe that it probably is. So I think there's a couple of different people who might be interested in listening to a podcast like this, especially surrounding first responders. A, it's a first responder, him or herself. B, maybe a family member of a first responder, and C, I think a clinical person who is trying to maybe get some education in terms of how to work with this population. But I guess I'm just wondering what your experience has been as a peer recovery specialist. How do you go about building rapport with a first responder who's on the unit?
Well, I think initially the key is most first responders have an element of toughness, hardness. Mm-hmm. First responders run to the fire. Most sensible people run away from the fire. And so I think there's a tremendous element that as a first responder, if I'm having difficulty, and it doesn't matter if it's physical, mental, I'm going to figure this out because I'm harder than woodpecker lips. And that kind of mentality serves many first responders in many life and death situations very
sure.
well.
Mm-hmm.
But with mental health, with substance issues, it becomes counterproductive. And so I think letting first responders know that as much as they would like to believe their situation, circumstances, spot in life right at that moment is incredibly unique, the shared experience of coming face to face with some limitations takes a lot of weight off their shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
And by sharing the experience of admitting that, yes, there is an obstacle I can't clear by myself. Yes, I do need help. How do I ask for help? how do I put that help to work to better myself? And and I think that those are the issues that open the door to allowing treatment to take place and recovery to begin.
So I wanted to follow up with you about something you just said, which is a saying that an expression I've never heard before, which is pretty great, which is harder than woodpecker lips. And you said that most first responders have kind of that tough mentality, which obviously, yes, it serves you very well in a crisis situation, an emergency situation. But can you talk a little bit about why that mentality can get in the way or is counterproductive, I think was the word you used, when it comes to mental health or substance use treatment?
So I think all of us, we look at having a drink or a drug as a way to change how I feel.
Sure.
And in the beginning, it does take the edge off. But then we begin to use whatever substance we use, almost demanding that it makes us feel better. And if it goes untreated long enough, we now are picking up, not because we want to feel different, but because we don't have a choice. Mm-hmm. And once we make the discovery that I can't pick and choose when I use, that substance is now controlling me, that kind of out of control understanding is incredibly confusing, mm-hmm. and makes it incredibly difficult to ask for help.
Sure. Is that, you think, the number one thing that's difficult with that mentality of, you know, being tough, being harder than woodpecker lips, is that asking for help piece?
Well, first responders overcome all obstacles, always and forever. And now they have run headlong into an obstacle that won't yield. And most first responders don't have a lot of experience in asking for help. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of pride. It's a lot of ego. And now when they encounter this situation, they become Ralph Cramden, hemina, hemina, hemina. And without that background and experience of, I'm in a predicament that I don't have a solution for, what do I do? Most of us try to go it alone. Give me 10 more minutes and I'll figure this out. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, our lives continue to spiral downward. And see, you chuckled when I mentioned Ralph Cramden. Mm-hmm. And my own story, without humor and laughter, my veneer of toughness, being hard, being able to be self-sufficient, without humor, you'd be talking to someone else today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, in other words, that's a really important quality.
Well, for a knucklehead like myself, yes. You know, uh-huh. Because through laughter, I could relax. And when I was relaxed, some of that recovery information got into my thick skull. Mm-hmm. And that recovery information is what has, in fact, saved my life.
I guess I'm curious, because we're talking about how, you know, asking for help is really difficult for this population, right? What would your advice be to a family member of a first responder who thinks that maybe their person, their spouse, their friend, whatever, has a problem? What would your advice be in terms of how to get someone, encourage someone to ask for help, or how to seem like a safe person that they can go to if they in fact need that support?
Well, I believe many hospitals that treat cancer, the whole notion of an emotional support group seems to me to be a wading pool or a kiddie pool so that your loved one can see a group interaction. And I know many vets do not hold the VA in high regard, unfortunately. But I know that the VA does utilize peers in their substance use treatment programs. And the best thing, I believe, is to see it in operation. Because unfortunately, there's almost a terminal uniqueness that I am the only person, the first person in the world to experience my particular set of circumstances. And therefore, this is impossible. Let me use my substance one more time to just take it down a notch. And now the cycle begins again. Sure. And so I'm suggesting if a person is able to communicate, getting their loved one to just observe an emotional support group take place, it might be food for thought, like a germination period.
And I think another thing that I hear you saying basically is, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, as soon as you can get them in a room with someone else who's like them, who might have gone through the same thing, that's basically worth its weight in gold.
Absolutely. Because when I identify that I think the way the person I'm hearing thinks, that I drink the way the person I'm hearing drinks, that I'm encountering difficulties in life the way the person I'm listening to does. You know, if I walk like a duck and quack like a duck, chances are pretty good I'm a duck and not the swan I had hoped to be.
So just seeing other people, again, who are like them, who are going through the same thing, who can relate, basically.
Yes.
And I guess I'm wondering, like, how do you do that in your day-to-day at Princeton House?
Well, I typically begin my first meeting with the person, and I explain to them my military service, and I explain to them my more recent recovery from addiction, and I point out that those two factors enable me to work with the first responder population. And many times I ask what brought them to Princeton House. And then I follow that up with, how can I help you? And sometimes people want to talk and sometimes people don't want to talk. And I typically use silence to explain that the six most important words I have learned are, I don't know, I need help. And I explain that it's okay to be not okay. And then I ask them what they would do if their computer froze up. And most people say, I would turn it off, I would unplug it, I'd replug it, and I'd try to reboot it.
I need to get myself a job in IT, because that's basically what they tell people to do all day.
Exactly. And so most people come to Princeton House to get a reboot, whether it's with mental health or mental health and substance use. But we need to switch up my perspective that no, this is not a challenge I have to solve all by myself. I need to ask for help, and I need to accept help, and I need to find out that when I think about a problem in my head, it typically becomes doom and gloom, and there is no solution. But when I articulate that same doom and gloom situation out loud to another human being, somehow speaking that problem takes the air out of its sails. And that problem starts to take a shape and a form and a size that's much more realistic than the great boogeyman I have constructed within my mind.